Hey, everyone. Do I have a challenge for you? So, I'm about to record episode 200. We just broke 350,000 total downloads. I was on Google Analytics, and 38,000 hits have been, pages have been viewed on our website. And so my challenge to you is to get Mike to come on and do an interview with me on episode 200. So if you want to hear Mike on episode 200, you've got to pretty much respond right away because I need to record it pretty quick here. But I was just trying to talk to him this morning and I was asking him if what is his least favorite thing to do in the garden, and did he have one? I was surprised. I didn't know that. What's his least favorite activity? I was like, is it weeding? Is it putting the mulch out? Is it, you know, what is it? Watering, because he's always watering in the cold. Is it, you know, dealing with bugs, because he had to pick a bunch of slugs off of his potato plants. I was like, what is your least favorite? And then, you know, he told me, and now what was it? I forgot. But anyway, if you would like to hear Mike on the Organic Gardener podcast on episode 200, I would recommend that you either email me or Facebook me or Instagram me or Twitter. Well, I don't know if tweets, but somehow reach out to us, join the Facebook group, or just send me a private message, or send me an email at orgpodcast@gmail.com. Or organicgardenerpodcast.com@gmail.com, or go to the website if you want to hear Mike, but do it right away. Thanks so much for listening. Give him a little confidence because I think he's still really shy. Bye now. But maybe don't mention that I suggested this or asked you to do it. Thanks. Better keep that part a secret. I know he's never going to listen to my podcast, so don't have to worry there. Haha, jokes. But you could reach out to him. I'm always encouraging people to reach out to Mike on Facebook and just be like, hey, Mike, why don't you do an interview with your wife? We'd like to hear you. Anyway, I started that intro before I started recording. It's Thursday, July 27, 2017 at 11:23 a.m. I just got off the phone with this amazing guest who also has a podcast that I know you're going to love. And I'm going to do something I've never done before. And I'm going to put out a raw episode. So you're going to hear the unedited version. I will try to get this edited and posted, but technically her interview would not play until like September if it goes in the order. Like, I like to keep them in the order that I recorded, but I think her information is so valuable. It's so pertinent. We talked about some stuff that's going on right now. August is coming up and I just really wanted you to hear this. So I'd love for you to reach out to Mike and say, hey, Mike, we want to hear your story, and try to encourage him because I think it'd be fun. And by the way, I did remember, what did he tell me? I was doing the dishes at the time and he joked his least favorite thing to do is the dishes, which I can see because, you know, he cooks a lot from the garden. He does all the canning from the garden. He does a constant. So maybe that will be what his least favorite thing. He does seem to like to be out there all the time. So what's your least favorite thing? I'd love to hear that too. So I'm going to be quiet now. I'm going to play this super long episode, but I just think she had so many value bombs, and you'll see. And this is the total raw edition, straight out of the box. I haven't edited it, which I've never done. I will clean it up. I'll get the show notes out there, but I just thought you might want to listen to it today, July 27, 2017. Maybe you're feeling some of the frustrations I've been feeling and feeling a little overwhelmed. And so she just energized me to get out there in my garden and kind of showed me some stuff with pruning looking on her website. So I know you're going to want to go to her website. It's full of valuable information. So thanks for listening, everyone. And here you go. And I'll get it cleaned up soon.
Hello.
I'm totally willing to share. I mean, I pretty much just type up my show notes and, you know, try to just put it out there, but the podcasting group. So now, do you belong to a podcasting group, or you just read an article, started interviewing people, and just put it out there?
Yeah, you know, I had, it was such a funny way of starting because I have a little bit of a background in radio and TV because I grew up in a high school that had a television station inside the high school. So that was an unusual experience, but it gave us a chance to take classes in TV and broadcasting, which for the mid-80s was pretty unique, especially in a small town, in southwestern Minnesota. But our public access channel, when that was put in our city, they decided to put it in the high school, and then there's this whole educational component that went along with that. And because of that experience, I learned how to edit, which is so key if you're doing any type of audio or video work. So having that experience with pretty decent technology way back when was very helpful. And then I was a playback engineer at my local radio station, and then at radio stations when I was in college. And then from that experience, I really didn't do much more in broadcasting, but I had started a blog when my kids, when I stayed home to take care of my kids, I started a blog. And while I liked blogging, I didn't have that instant connection with it. I wanted to, I just never felt the same passion that I have felt when I started podcasting. And my podcasting origin story is my husband had gone away on a business trip. He was actually going overseas and he was going to be gone for like 7 days. And so I am a voracious reader and I have probably 30 magazine subscriptions that come to my house every month. And so, and I love to read magazines and books and all kinds of stuff. And so my husband had just left, and I remember I sat down on the sofa and I was going to plow through all these magazines. And there was an article in Better Homes and Gardens that was called 50 Apps for Your iPhone That Will Help Make Your Life Easier, something like that. And I am a huge app user. I went all Apple in 2012. I got my iMac, I got my iPad, I got my iPhone. And I loved the integration that it offered. And when I started to have all of these Apple products, I was going through apps like crazy too, because I love all the new technology. And so when I was reading this article, I thought, okay, yep, got this one, tried this one. I'm going through it. I was looking for, just one or two new that might catch my attention. And at the very end of the article, they started talking about podcasting applications. And I think the one that they had listed was Stitcher. And I thought, I wonder what this is all about. And I went to Stitcher. And of course, one of the first things I looked up was gardening to see if there were any gardening podcasts. And I started listening. And the minute I was listening, I was like, oh my gosh, I can totally do this. Because I knew that I could put together a show based on my early experiences in high school and college. And the other thing that struck me was that there are just not that many gardening podcasts. So I thought, oh, this is perfect. I'll just do a gardening podcast. So day one, I immediately sat down and ordered all my equipment from Amazon. By day two, I was reaching out to guests. And long story short, when my husband came home 7 days later, I gave him a quick kiss when he walked in the door and I said, honey, I got an interview. I got to go. And so, that's really how it started. And, I was blown away because, it really is the equivalent of having your own media company. If you're able to put together a podcast or put together some type of online blog or website or anything like that, we all have such a tremendous ability now to get our message out and to communicate. And I love it. And so, people are so generous with their time and with their expertise. When you reach out and ask someone to be a guest, it blows me away every single time that somebody says yes and is willing to share all of their information. And it helps me grow and learn. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I've got four kids and I stay home with them. And it's important to me to be very involved in helping them transition into adulthood. And so that requires that I'm here. And so as much as I would love to jet set around and go to conference after conference and meet with people face to face, I'm a little limited. And so by interviewing, you know, guests on my show, I'm able to continue to grow and learn. And at the same time, I can be sitting here in my pajamas, or I can be, you know, at a moment's notice, running somebody to an orthodontist appointment or going to a basketball game or helping somebody learn to play the piano. And all of that is, you know, something that I can do because I have this business that I'm operating out of my home now. And I love that part of it. It's really a great medium for folks who want to work out of their home
and have their own schedule.
Yes.
For me, that is like so key. I had this one job once where I worked in town where we had I ran a print shop, but I was also the sales representative. So as a sales representative, part of my job was just to like go to every single business in town. And because it's a small town, like I would just walk in the door to like, I'd walk into the hardware store because I needed, you know, seeds or a watering part. And the person's like, oh, by the way, I need this. So it enabled me to have the freedom to walk around. But at the same time, I love that. I have such a hard, plus I'm so not into routine. Like I struggle in school all the time. So I'm like, what? You want me to do the exact same thing at 8:15 and at 8:20 and at 8:25 and at 12:20 and 12:15 and 1:30 and what? Oh my gosh. Every single day. One year I taught PE to 8 kindergarten classes in a row, or 8 first grades in a row, all afternoon for 20 minutes a class. So it was like, I had to say the exact same rules, the exact same lesson, 8 lessons in a row. I mean, there's no time to change anything. Whatever you're doing for that day, it was just 8 exact identical. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I love what you're doing. So I haven't even introduced you. Like, I'm just going to play this, but I need to like just kind of welcome you to the show really quick. So sure. Listeners, my audience, I'm so excited to introduce my feature guest today, who's kind of already told us a little bit of her story. She has an amazing podcast called The Still Growing Podcast. And I've been fascinated this morning going through her website because it is just lovely and full of information, much more information than, I mean, because your information comes from you personally, whereas like a lot of my information comes from my listeners and my guests, and I just kind of transcribe. I haven't really gotten into blogging like you have. And the best thing I loved about your website today was, I've been so frustrated, it seems like. The last week I've been thinking all about working in the garden and how much is out there and feeling overwhelmed and really have to water again and just different things going on. And you just totally re-energized me. I saw your piece on the news and your garden just looks lovely and it just looks so... So I just think listeners are going to love this day. So anyway, I haven't even said your name yet, I guess. So Jennifer Ebling from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I'll be quiet from here on out, listeners. She's all yours. So, and as I said, she has a podcast too that I know you're going to love, the Still Growing Podcast. So welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Jackie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're just excited. So you told us a lot, but like, where does 6 foot mama come from? Like, are you 6 foot tall?
I am. I'm 6 feet tall. You know, it's so funny because when I was, again, this kind of goes back to my blog, which was started before my podcast. And I was just going to be blogging about raising the kids and gardening and cooking and decorating and all of the things that I love to do. And I was trying to think of a name for my blog at the time. And I thought, well, you know, what's something that somebody would say about me after meeting me? And the one thing I know people will say is they'll say, oh, she's really tall. And I'm 6 feet tall. And I used to give piano lessons. And my piano students would call me the 6 foot mama. They'd just say, oh, I have lessons with the 6 foot mama. And it was just kind of a funny little thing. And so way back when Jesse Ventura was the governor of the state of Minnesota, one of the things that he did was he lowered the amount that people would have to pay on their vanity license plates to $100. And so it made it very affordable for people to get vanity plates for their vehicles, because prior to that, it was really exorbitant. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get a new, if I have to get a minivan, which I was doing, I was moving from my SUV to a minivan because of the kit of the kids and then the, you know, the baby seats and all that stuff that was so hard to get to in an SUV. I thought, well, if I have to suffer and get a minivan, then I'm going to have a vanity plate that's going to say 6 foot mama. And so when I started my blog, that was the name of my blog. And so, and it's the number 6, FTMAMA, and that was my, that's still my license plate, and that's the name of my website. And so when I was creating the podcast, and in that furious activity that was taking place in 7 days, I thought, what am I going to call this gardening show? And I thought, well, you know, one of the things that I always tell the kids is, yes, we're going to be tall people, but you're never done growing. You're always growing. You're continuing to grow and learn. You can be in your 40s and start a podcast. You can be in your 30s and start a blog. You can be in your 50s and start a business. There's no end to learning. You're never done. And so I think about gardening in those terms as well, because I think gardeners always feel somewhat inadequate when they're talking to other gardeners. There's no way we can know everything about every plant or every product or, you know, everything about plant physiology or chemicals or, you know, all of the things that go into gardening. And it's a continuous learning process. And so when I was thinking about what to call the show, that's what came to me, still growing. And it's kind of a pun on the fact that, yeah, I'm tall, you know, but that we're all still growing. And so that's how I came up with the name for the show. And that's why my blog is called 6 Foot Mama. And it's so funny because I am in a couple of podcaster masterminds. And so I speak with fellow women that are podcasting from all over the world. I have a dear friend in Sweden who does a shipping podcast. I have a friend in Canada that has a fertility podcast. I have a woman in Virginia that does a fashion and technology podcast. I have a woman in North Carolina that does a women of faith in the marketplace. There's another woman I talked to that is doing a financial karma podcast. I have a friend in Arizona that does a breastfeeding podcast. And the point of me sharing this with you is that when I'm speaking with all of them about all the different kinds of things that we're doing, it's very helpful to, you know, connect with others that are sharing your passion for this particular medium, but then also, you know, talking about what you're passionate about. In my case, it's gardening. In their case, it's all these different topic areas, but it's very helpful.
Now, where'd you find them? On Facebook or somewhere else?
You know, with the first group, my first mastermind that I joined, I was actually in a paid mastermind is how I connected with some of those ladies. And then once we had started to connect, we just continued meeting after the paid mastermind experience was over. And then with the other group, I just created that group because I was looking for one more mastermind experience, just something to add on to the experience that I already had because I was enjoying it so much. And so I thought, well, let's try one more group. And so that's a group that I put together, and I love them both. They're very, very helpful. When you're, you know, putting together any type of content creation, you're usually doing it in isolation. You know, you're doing it all by yourself. So whether you're putting together a gardening show or a show about financial health, you're doing that by yourself. And so it's really great if you can get together with people that are doing the same thing and just talk through, you know, once a week, well, here's what I'm struggling with, or here's what I'm trying. Whether it's from a tech standpoint or maybe a system issue that you might be having, because there's workflows and processes that you want to put together when you're hosting any type of weekly program that make it run smoother, that really help it.
Do you listen to Kate's Take from like John Lee Dumas and Kate Erickson?
I don't listen to that one. I know about it. And I used to listen to Entrepreneur on Fire when it started. In fact, the kids and I would listen to that one in the morning on their way to school, like all through middle school. And it was so funny because the boys would, they could imitate John Lee Dumas. They knew exactly what they would say. Oh, we're on fire. You know, they would do all the little
jokes. Are you prepared to ignite?
Yeah. Right. They could do all those little quips and things that John does. And, And then, you know, after a while, I was good. I mean, I got a ton of benefit from listening to that podcast in particular, and I love that show. But I don't listen to it anymore, but I totally,
I just,
you know,
ask, because Kate very is much like, Kate's the master of systems and processes. Like, she, her podcast is all, that's what it's all about, was what I, but I also, I mean, John, that's where I learned, I joined Podcasters Paradise, was where I learned how to podcast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So I was just curious if it was kind of like that. So do you want to, like, usually, even though we're almost 20 minutes in already, I ask about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Like, who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, did you, you must have grown up in Minneapolis. Is that what you were saying?
You know, I actually grew up in southwestern Minnesota in a small town called Worthington, Minnesota. And it's about 10 miles north of the Iowa border and about 30 miles east of South Dakota. So right in that small little corner of Minnesota. And my first real gardening experience, I would say, was when we bought our first home. We were 24 years old, and we basically planted a lot of shrubs and trees on this particular property. It was our first property. And I worked with a designer at a garden center, and then I bought all the plant material and placed it all. And my husband and I put together a 80-foot retaining wall, which we vowed we'd never do again. And my parents actually ended up buying that house. And so to this day, I get to, yeah. So to this day, I get to go back and see, you know, how everything's doing. It looks great. We did a good job. I have to say it was, you know, well worth the time, all the time we spent researching what plants we were going to put in. But the one thing I learned from that experience was that I wanted to be an ornamental gardener, and I didn't want landscape rock. And this property was covered in landscape rock. So we were dealing with the hand we'd been dealt. And I really longed for just good soil and being able to, you know, plant ornamentals, which is what I did when I bought this house. And so when we moved up here to lovely Maple Grove, that was the first thing I did, is I had some neighbor boys that whose parents owned a nursery come over to the house and help me dig out the first garden that we put in. Because of course, when you're in a brand new development, everything that's up tight against the house is basically backfill. It's really tough to plant in there. And so in that first garden, it's probably the nicest garden that I have from a soil standpoint, just because they dug it out. We brought in all of the good soil, and it's just still to this day so easy to plant in that garden, in that particular bed. And that's how we got it started. We went from this first home experience to this one, and slowly but surely I did what most gardeners do, and that is start to have gardens that go all around the house. And so it keeps me very busy. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Wow. So like, your grandparents didn't garden, your parents didn't garden, your the first garden was when you were 24?
Yeah, you know, my grandmother in Iowa had a huge garden. She had a huge garden, and she was a great gardener. I remember picking strawberries with her, but I didn't really learn to garden from her. And my other grandmother had peonies, and I remember vividly standing by those peonies. And, you know, that was an early memory, but, you know, she wasn't really gardening. And funny story, now all these years later, I actually have those peonies in my garden. And it turns out those peonies were the peonies that she and my grandfather were married in between these peonies. And I have them in my garden to this day. So they have been dug up and moved, I think, 3 or 4 times now, just so that, you know, I could hang on to those heirloom peonies, just because they have meaning to our family. I, you know, they're just a standard, you know, red peony, but they're meaningful to me. So it's a sentimental plant.
All right, so do you want to drop some golden seeds about the best way to move peonies? Because peonies have been hard for Mike and I to get growing. And what I love about them here is that the deer don't eat them. Got any?
Yeah, the deer don't eat them. You know, the one thing I say to people is think about where you want to put them, because once they're done blooming, they're just, you know, they're really not too spectacular. So I like to put them in an area where, well, first of all, I think good drainage. I mean, drainage, drainage, drainage. Isn't that the key to so many plants out there? And the other thing, of course, is to plant them pretty high. One thing I do when I transplant a peony is I dig them up. I go pretty wide around them, and I try to dig up, you know, as much of the root mass as I can. But then I'll take a garden hose and kind of wash off the top of that plant so I can very clearly see the eyes, see the crown of that plant, and that does not get buried. That's very key. You don't want to bury your peonies too deeply. So I think the combination of the well-drained soil, making sure that you can see that crown, plant them a little high, that's been the key for me. In fact, I just bought a peony for my neighbor. She wanted a peony.
Sorry.
And I told her the same thing. I'm like, you know, plant this thing high. Because, of course, anybody who's planting thinks that they have to bury the plant. And when I think about planting peonies, I think about it kind of in the same way I think about planting trees, which is you want to see that root flare. And with peonies, you want to see that the top of that plant and the eyes of that plant.
So when you say plant it high, you mean when you put it in the ground, don't bury it too deep, I guess. That's what you said. I was going to say, what do you mean don't plant too high? Like don't put the stem too far down in the ground?
Yeah, where imagine
the crown,
like,
I guess.
Well, it's the top of the plant. So it's like where the plant connects with the root mass, you'll see there's like these little eyes there and I tell my student gardeners that work with me, I'll say, you know, when I'm talking about the eyes of the plant, I mean, like, imagine they're your eyes. You need to see the sun. These plants need to see the sun. So if you bury them too deeply, they can't see the sun and they're not going to bloom. And so if you ever have a peony fail on you like that, it can be because you just have buried it too deeply. You know, iris don't like that. They don't want to be buried deeply. Peonies are like that. Same principle with trees. Yeah, kind of the same principle with trees. I mean, sometimes even I've planted them where I kind of mound it up a little bit. Because, again, it's they need to have good drainage, and they want to be able to see the sun. So you want that. You want where the plant mass is meeting that root ball, you want that top to be exposed. You want that to be able to see things. So, and then I usually will put some leaf matter over that in the wintertime to protect that a little bit. Because, of course, you know, we're in Minnesota. It gets cold here. And so that's basically it. That's all I do. And I do not cut my peonies down until the spring. I just wait till the following spring. And then I'll just very gently cut the old material, and I'll leave about 2 to 3 inches of that old matter on the plant, and then the new peonies kind of grow up around it. And so I think sometimes in the spring, gardeners, when they're doing their cleanup, they can hurt their peonies because they'll go through and try to do cleanup, and they're wrenching on that old plant material, and they'll pull out the new growth with it just inadvertently. So I tell people, I'm like, be very careful in the spring when you're doing your peony cleanup. Don't go crazy trying to make it perfectly clean. It's totally fine to have some old leaf matter in there. If you never cleaned up after your peonies, if you never did anything, they'd be a lot better off, I think, than sometimes the people that go in and want their garden to be perfect, because they can damage that growth, and that's never good.
So when is the best time to, like, break up irises and peonies? Like now after they've bloomed, or in the spring, or in the late fall?
Well, with peonies, you know, I generally don't, I don't divide my peonies, and I don't, I mean, I guess I've never really encouraged anyone to do that, but you know, sometimes you have to move your peonies. And so in that case, I always say the best time to move them is when you have a shovel in your hand, because I'm a mom, which I know is not going to appeal to a lot of gardeners, because you know, they're going to say, oh, you should probably do it in the fall. And I agree. But there are just things that, you know, get in the way. So you have all these great intentions. But if you don't get that peony moved, you know, in the perfect time, then you have to do it when it works for you. And so I just say, again, just make sure you read up and about how to, you know, plant these things so that you end up having the best result possible. And again, so much of it, I think, can be, I don't know, just made better or made easier for you if you just make sure that drainage is good. Don't plant them where they're going to be wet. And, you know, it's just like
you don't have that problem at my house.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah, we, you know,
listeners
and
might, I mean,
yeah,
just
you know,
kind of
even at
tell
my,
you
yeah,
where.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, even on my property, I've got some wet areas, but then I always love the plants that say, you know, they like boggy conditions. And then I think, okay, perfect. That's what I'm planting, you know, Ligularia or Ridgersia or even Queen of the Prairie will, you know, can handle that wet, or any type of willow. But, you know, these other plants that are a little more sensitive to that, you want to be a little more cautious. So if even if I don't know much about a plant, I will just assume that good drainage is probably a key part, because it is for so many.
Okay. So how did you learn how to garden organically then, if you taught yourself pretty much?
You know, I attribute so much of what I've learned from gardening podcasts. I listen to gardening podcasts. So it's so funny, because even though I'm creating a gardening podcast, I myself also listen to gardening podcasts. And I actually tell people at the top of almost every show that I really hope that they're listening to a lot of gardening podcasts, because it's such a great way to grow and learn. And, you know, my favorites, the ones that I started listening to, were A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic. And You Bet Your Garden with Mike McGrath. Wonderful show. Love what Mike does. I recently started listening to Gardening with Angelo. What I love about him is he is a nursery owner operator. I love listening to owner operators. They have a pragmatism and an awareness of what people are concerned about in the now, because that's their business. They're selling plants. They need to know what their customers are thinking and wanting. And so that's what I appreciated about listening to his particular podcast. But I listen to a lot of gardening podcasts, and that's what I attribute a lot of my, I don't know, what I do in my garden. And, you know, a great time to listen to a gardening podcast is when you're working in your garden.
I'll say, it's so funny, because when I joined Podcasters Paradise, which I joined back in April of 2014, thinking, well, first off, I thought I was on Webinar on Fire and not Podcasting on Fire. And I was thinking Mike would just do webinars to teach people how to garden. I didn't really know, like, I don't know why. I never thought about interviewing. And then I was also like, would people really listen to a podcast in the garden? But I know I'm listening to the podcast when I'm down in the garden working. Like yesterday, it just made harvesting the Swiss chard go so fast for me. And then like Robin Kelson's told me she's listened to my podcast in the garden and other people. And like, at first I was like, nobody would do that, but I can totally see it now. So those are some great, I've listened to Mike McGrath and Margaret Roach, but I haven't heard of Angelo, so I'll have to try him. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, Gardening with Angelo. I really like that show. And you know, it's funny, because when you're doing a gardening podcast, I don't know about you, but for me, I always assume that people are happy, that they're in a happy place, and that they're, you know, or even just maybe in a neutral spot, right? They're doing laundry, they're driving somewhere. You know, you think about the activities that people are doing when they're listening to a podcast. They can't be having a conversation with someone else. They can't be doing something too mentally taxing, because otherwise they're not really listening to the show. So they're usually doing some solitary kind of mindless activity while they're listening to a podcast. But I got a letter, I don't know, about a year ago from a woman, and I'd never forgotten it. And she was driving to see her mom in hospice. And she said, I wanted to thank you for having a 2-hour show, because the drive to see my mom is 2 hours. And instead of crying during this drive, I'm listening to you. It's a great distraction. And I thought, okay, so that was a reset for me, because just because you're doing a podcast about something relatively happy doesn't mean your listener is in a happy spot. And it just was a reminder to me that, you know, what we're doing is important. And we are giving people information, good quality information, and we can be giving them a break if their life is in a tough place, that they can just kind of escape. So that part, I guess that part has just continued to stick with me. And I think about that particular listener and that letter a lot when I'm creating my show.
I think even more than, or like, I guess the way I look at it is podcasts for me and probably that listener, it's just, it's inspiring. It gives you hope. It it's connecting with other listeners. You know, you feel part, like, you know, I feel like a part of the other listeners to Entrepreneur on Fire, or I feel a part of the other podcast shows, you know, like, I listen to this one picture book about being a children's book illustrator, or when I listen to other, you know, it's just, to me, it's like connecting, it's inspiring, it's like feeling a bigger part of, and like that the future is going to be better. And like, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And that's so sweet, I think. And I think your show is super inspiring, the way, like, and especially like, I was listening how you talk a lot more at the beginning of your podcast, I think, than I do about what's going on in your garden. Because at my house, actually, my husband's more the gardener. I'm kind of the, you know, go down and maybe I'll help out for like an hour, a few days a week, or 20 minutes here. Or I almost always have a full time. There'll be 3 or 4 days where I won't even get to the garden. So I think the way we approach it's differently, and it's really nice to have all these different ways. You know, you wouldn't want every podcast to be the same. So it's nice to have a diversity of podcasts out there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and thank you for that. You know, it's, I think every show is like every garden, right? There's no two garden the same. There's no podcast the same. And when you're doing anything, you want to be, you know, true to you and how you operate. So I have, my show has evolved over time. And if you listen to early episodes, they were primarily interview format shows, long format. I wanted a long format because the majority of gardening shows are shorter format, probably because a lot of them are syndicated and they're on NPR. So, you know, they have to deal with commercials and they have to deal with, you know, rules around length. But if you're an independent podcaster, you can choose, you know, what you want your show to look like. And the first thought that I had when I was thinking about creating my show was, it's got to be longer, because I would listen to You Bet Your Garden, or especially Margaret Roach's A Way to Garden. And I thought, oh, darn it, we were just getting to the good part of this interview, and I wish you would have asked this, this, and this. But there were time constraints. So when I started interviewing guests on my show, I wanted to make sure we would do a thorough conversation about their book or about whatever it is that they were a subject matter expert in. And so I really set out to have that longer format show. And, you know, that part for me is great because I feel like for myself, I get that satisfaction that sometimes only comes from having a longer conversation, but that a shorter conversation just doesn't give you. And so that's what I had set out to do with my particular gardening show. And then at the end, I would usually have my kids come in and they would read some garden poetry. It was like a little Easter egg at the end of the show. And I don't do that anymore, but I have integrated poetry or quotables, garden quotables, into the show. My show now starts out with an update on what's going on in the listener community, because about a year ago, I created a Facebook group for listeners of the show, and it's a place where they can share what's going on in their gardens, ask questions of me, but at the same time, it's the only place that I will go to pick winners for any giveaways for the show. Guests of the show are also in the group, so if they have a question about an episode where they've heard a guest speak, oftentimes they can continue that conversation because they can just ask the guest. The guest is in that Facebook group. And the other thing that happens is I curate content that I use in the show. I have this segment that follows the listener community update, and it's called the Garden News Roundup. And so all week I am curating good gardening articles, and I have a number of sources. I probably look through 100 different, or over 100 probably, sources of horticulture and gardening news in online and in print. And then I share that with my listener community. So I do this update as part of my show, but there's no need to take notes. You don't need to write anything down or track down links, because it's all shared for free in this free Facebook group for listeners of the show. And so I'm a curator for the people that are in that group and for the folks that listen to my show. And that's the unique thing, I think, about my show. That's probably the most unique thing, is that I don't think there's anyone out there right now that's doing that's curating gardening news and information and then pulling it together and reading it to you or telling you about it in a podcast. And so it's kind of a hyper-focused, you know, news roundup is essentially why I called it the Garden News Roundup. But it's so that you don't have to, you know, go around and try to track these things down and verify, is this a true story or is it not a true story? I mean, that's what I'm doing for you. And then I go into whatever the show is about. So it could be a solo episode. I started doing solo episodes a lot more after I had gone through my rotator cuff surgery earlier this spring. And so, for instance, I just did a show on basil over the summer that was very popular. And one of the things that people went crazy for is I talked about how easy it is to propagate basil. And people are passionate about basil. They love basil. And since that episode aired, now I get pictures of people showing me, I'm propagating my basil. Here are my little basil cuttings. Or, you know, they're so excited about that. So that was fun. But I would say in that regard, my show is a lot like all the other gardening shows, you know, where we're talking to people who have written a book or people who have a gardening method or people who are subject matter experts on a particular plant or flower. And then that's it. That's the show. So that's the format. Listener community, garden news update, and then whatever the topic of the show is.
Oh my goodness. Well, I knew that listeners are going to love this and they're going to want to check out your Facebook group or join your Facebook group or get on your newsletter and get those news roundups. I know they're going to probably dying to hear how to propagate basil. do we ever have enough basil? I feel like I can never have enough basil. And I went and planted a whole tub of basil, but I don't know. I just did it July 7th. So if I'm going to get any basil out of it, it'll be a miracle. Unless Mike brings it in the house. I don't know if that'll work or not. Because it's like this giant tub. The one thing I was going to say is there is somebody doing something very similar on the other side of the world. John Moore has the Organic World News, where he puts out a show and has been putting out information where he kind of curates content like that. But I love that because somebody told me that's what I should be doing because, like, my show notes are so long. Like, if you like, click to make my show notes into a PDF, they'll come out between, like, 17 and 27 pages or something crazy, like, because I just kind of try to transcribe while I'm editing. And someday I've always thought I'm going to come up with this, like, Golden Seeds magazine, and it's going to be, like, just, you know, the highlights of what people say from just my episodes alone. But that's time consuming. So I can understand how that definitely adds value to your show and makes it a very special experience. And you know what? I was thinking about that because I've been trying to batch some episodes, and I, like, my goal for the summer is to get 32 episodes recorded and edited and ready to go so I can get through September through December, because I went back to school teaching again, and just when I'm in teaching mode, it's very hard for me to do anything.
Oh, yeah,
and I only put out 15 episodes from January till July, I think, new episodes this last spring, and there was a miracle I got those out. And so, but I've also been thinking, I've been replaying a lot of old episodes this summer, and when I go back and listen to them, I think about how timely they were. Like, for me, part of it, like, if I get too far ahead or if I don't, like, put in stuff that's going on, I'm missing my gardening season. Like, so I think that's another really special thing about your show, is it's very current about what's going on right now. Like, I just produced a couple of weeks ago shows I interviewed in February, which fortunately they were, a lot of them were talking about soil health, so it was pertinent. But some things I feel like, you know, it's really nice that you have that current, this is what's going on in my garden right now. Right now we're all talking about basil. Right now we're, you know, talking about the overwhelm of what's going on in our garden. So speaking of that, do you want to tell us what is growing well in your garden this year? Which is really my first official question.
That's your first official question. You know, let's see. This year, well, right now I'm battling Japanese beetles, like everybody else, I'm sure, at this time. It is July 27th, as we're talking today, and that is the hot topic, and whether or not you should get the baits, you know, to attract the Japanese beetles and try to take care of them. And I think the consensus from the research that I've read is, you know, if you can't, if you're not in a rural area where you can put those baits far away, you know, to try to drive them and out, I think it's really detrimental probably to put those baits up, because you're, the article that I've been reading are saying that you're going to attract like four times as many Japanese beetles, you know, to your property. So if you're dealing with that, and right now, of course, they're on my roses and my grapes and my beans, my green beans, and my willow trees, interestingly enough. You know, that's something that I'm dealing with. It's not unique to my garden. Everybody's dealing with. This year, let's see. I mean, my Liatris looks fantastic. I had a great Amazonia spring. That was gorgeous. I had a great spring flowering shrub experience this summer. The Joe Pieweed looks fantastic. I've got Joe Pieweed all over my garden. And, you know, if you've been gardening for a while and you have Joe Pieweed, you know that's what happens. It goes everywhere.
But what is Joe Pieweed? I don't even know what
that is. Oh, my gosh. It's this huge perennial, and it's very tall. It can be, you know, it's probably about 6 feet tall, and it's got this huge plumish kind of seed head on top, gorgeous purple flower, gorgeous in bouquets. Just, I mean, it's stunning. And I think about it like mint. If you don't want it, pull it out. I have cut plant that's kind of unique to my garden. It's a native. And what's interesting about it is where the leaves come together, they make a little cup. The leaves actually are like this. It's almost like the stem comes out of the middle of the leaves. There's a term for it, and I can't think of it right now. But the leaves wrap all around the stem, and they make this cup. And then the water, any type of rain or water, collects in that cup. And the finches and all the birds love to drink the water from this cup plant. It's a native. I think it has some special meaning to Native Americans. It's a prairie plant. I love it. I got it. I buy a lot of plants off of Craigslist from private plant sellers. And that's how I acquired my cup plant. And cup plant is a little bit like Joe Pieweed in the sense that it will spread. Not in the same way Joe Pieweed will, but it is just a plant that will turn into a crop in no time. So you have to be, you know, diligent about containing it at times.
Spell Joe Pie, like P-I-E, like a pie that you eat?
So it's the word Joe, like the name Joe, and then it's P-Y-E, Joe Pieweed. And it's a native. It's a native. And the one I love is the really big one and the really tall one. There's a couple varieties. And you know, you really probably only need to buy one or two, and then pretty soon you'll have them all over your garden. I love lovage, which is it's in the celery family, and lovage is also, you know, a native here. And it gets very tall. So, I mean, this one gets to be about 8 feet tall, but I love it in my garden because with my student gardeners, especially, you know, I can stump them sometimes. They'll be like, what do you think this is? And then they'll be smelling it and they recognize that smell because it smells like celery, but they just can't, when you're smelling it out of context, you can't identify what that plant is. So I have that in my garden. That's probably something that's a little unique to my garden.
Can I ask about your student gardeners? Like, who are your, do you teach at school? Or like, where do you have the, do you have a garden club or?
No, you know, these are gardeners that are, or these are kids that are in my community that help me in my garden. And in exchange for that, they learn an awful lot about gardening. In fact, a lot of them go on to work for the local nurseries because they now understand what they're doing. You know, they understand about, you know, taking care of a garden, everything from planting to harvesting to design to irrigation. I mean, irrigation is probably the thing they fight over the most. I have drip irrigation and lines all over the property, and they learn about fountain repair and how to repair wicker furniture. They're kind of a jack of all trades when they're done here. But they get to experience so much about the garden and about the different plants that they just have a blast. So,
and like, how old are they? I mean, like high school kids?
Yeah, they got to be able to drive. So, you know, usually high school kids, and we work in short bursts. In fact, I did a couple of episodes on having kids help you in the garden. I think the way that I do it is a little bit different, but one of the tips that I tell people is, you know, a lot of times people want kids to help them in their garden, and then they get discouraged because they don't feel like the kids did a great job. But what I tell people is, you can't have some kids come and help you in the garden, or a kid is usually the case, and then have them weed for hours on end and think they're going to enjoy that. Nobody's going to enjoy that. So what I do is I will have kids work together. I'll have more than one. I'll usually have a group of 4 to 6, and I pair them off in teams of 2. And we work in 15-minute increments. So for 15 minutes, we're doing this activity, and then we switch and we do a different activity. And I use my Apple Watch, so my Apple Watch is dinging every 15 minutes, and we switch things up, and I'm out there with them. So we're doing work widths together, and they're learning. They're not out there in isolation by themselves. And probably one of the coolest things that I have them do at the end of every one of our sessions together is they, for the last 10 minutes, they go through the garden with their phone, which of course they have on their iPhone, and they take pictures of the garden. They take pictures of the work that they did. They take pictures of the things that they made or that they created. And the bonus for me is that they come back, and if each of them have taken 25 to 30 pictures, wide shots, close-ups, you name it, and then we do an airdrop onto my phone, when they leave, I've got close to 200 pictures of my garden, and it's from all these different perspectives.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, and that is so helpful because, yeah, especially in Minnesota, I'm not in my garden, you know, half of the year, but I want to, you know, look at my garden. I want to be able to plan. And I'm just like every other middle-aged or older person out there. I can't remember sometimes what my garden looked like at, you know, in August, or what I had planted, or what was not working, or, you know, or maybe I forgot to take a wide shot, and so I don't have the whole, you know, perspective of the whole garden. And so those pictures are wonderful. And I tell you what, getting, you know, 4 to 6 different perspectives on what's beautiful in your garden, you see your garden in a new way. You know, all you have to do sometime is invite a stranger to come through your garden, or have a new friend who's never seen your garden, and you'll see your garden through their eyes. And sometimes it's the things we overlook or underappreciate that can be the most beautiful to a new visitor in your garden. It's amazing.
Okay, so then this is awesome, because I'm always encouraging people to get their kids in the garden. Do you pay these? And all right, how long does, like, so 15 minutes for like 2 hours? Do they just come for 2 hours one day since you have 4 kids, or for half a day or a day, or like how long?
You know, it really depends. So like, you know, in the beginning, in the spring, they might come and work for, you know, 10 hours, and then I won't see them again until July. You know, it really depends on how much work there is to do. Some of them are just doing it because they have volunteer hours that they have to do for church. Some of them I might pay, like, okay, guess what? I'm going to give you $100. That's 10 hours of work. Let's see what we get done. And that's basically it. It's not, you know, it's not like a regular thing, but it's something, you know, it helps me because I have limited time to get out there. And, but, you know, many hands make light work. That's definitely the case. And, you know, they like it because they're learning and growing. So,
the other thing is
I'm flexible, which is something else. You know, if you're going to, anytime you're going to work with kids, you've got to be flexible because they're busy. Their lives are so much more complicated now than, you know, what I experienced growing up in the 70s. They have places to be. They have so many commitments. In many cases, they have other jobs that they're trying to work around. So what I'll do is I'll send out the call to the kids, and I'll be like, hey, you know, I can use a couple hours this week. If anybody wants to come over, bring your friends. I don't care. And they'll tell me, well, I can pop over at noon. That's fine. You know, if you don't want to work in the morning when it's cooler, which would be my preference, then fine. We'll work at noon. You know, it's 2 hours. It's not like, you know, we're going to be out there for 8 hours. And again, if you have, you know, a group of kids coming over to help you, you can get a lot done. And that's the other thing. I mean, think about hiring anyone, whether they're a kid or an adult. You want to tell me that they're at the same productivity level after 6 hours of working than they would be after an hour of working? I mean, there's just no way. We all get slower. We all get tired. We all get just fatigued from doing the same thing over and over again. It's that monotony that you talked about at the top of the show, you know, when you had to teach that class over and over and over again. It's the same thing when you hire anyone, whether they're a kid or not, to come and weed in your garden. And you think that they're going to be, you know, thrilled to do that for hours and hours on end. No one is. And so it's a much better strategy to hire kind of a small crew, have them come in for 2 hours a week or something like that, and then just be done with it. It's so great. It really works so much better. But even for me, weeding is really not my thing. I don't find weeding to be relaxing. I want to address it, but I'm probably more of a live and let live kind of gardener. I have areas where, okay, weeds can be in this area. And then I have other areas where I'm a little more picky about, and we're going to address that. And so it really depends, but that definitely is not the bulk of their time when they're with me. We're doing projects in the garden. We're doing crafts. We're doing, other things. We're repairing fountains. We're putting together little projects that I find online that I want to try in my own garden. We're placing statuary, we're painting. Those are more of the things that we're doing when I'm working with my student gardeners than when we're weeding. That's just not the bulk of the time. But I suspect for most people, when they're trying to get kids to come help them in the garden, that's the primary reason that they're wanting them to come and help them, is they want help with weeds. I would just challenge anybody who's thinking about having young people help them in their garden that just know that they're capable of so much more. And if you ask them to help with drip irrigation, or you ask them to help repair a wicker chair, or ask them to get online and read about a pump in your garden or a lighting system or whatever, that they're capable of all of that, and they love those challenges.
Aww. I gotta ask, so what about your kid? You have
I have 4 kids in 5 years, and I also have a big dog. But you know, my kids help me in the garden, but this is not their job. They have jobs. They have, you know, jobs that they do. But I never wanted my passion to become their job. I wanted them to, if they want to like gardening, if gardening is going to be their thing, then let them come to it. They certainly have somebody, you know, here that can help them with it. And we've each had, you know, with each of my children, I've had, you know, little things that we've done in the garden together. You know, my oldest is my lawnmower. He's my edger. He loves to weed whip. So he'll take down little areas, little paths for me, little nuisance spots. That's how he contributes. And then my daughter is a very thorough, very thoughtful gardener. But, you know, when I'm working with my student gardeners, we're going a mile a minute. That's not Emma. That's not my daughter. So if she and I are going to plant together, or if we're going to harvest basil and make pesto together, you know, those are things that are life-giving to her. But I'm not going to make her work in my garden. She's making money. She's got her own job. She doesn't need to work in my garden. And then, you know, my younger two boys, Johnny is he's my spring planter, and he's my harvester. He loves to do that. PJ just likes to be among the flowers, and he will carry things for me and do things for me, but I don't think he's particularly interested in any of it. He's just glad that, you know, it makes me happy. That's, you know, his thing. He plays basketball, and I'm glad that makes him happy. So I think about it in the same way I thought about piano when I taught piano. So I taught piano lessons for 20 years, and I never forced my kids to take piano lessons, primarily because all of my piano teachers had children that were forced to play piano. And I'm telling you, there is nothing more miserable than a kid that's been forced to play piano if they don't want piano. And so I think about gardening in the same way. Just because I garden and have a gardening podcast, that does not mean that my 4 kids have to be in the garden all the time. If they want to help me, that's great. If they don't want to be in the garden, that's fine too. They can pursue their own things in life that are life-giving to them.
Well, it sounds like they're getting a lot of gardening time in with you anyway, you know, just helping at different things that works with them. And, you know, that's what my mom was like with us. Like, if we were like, I remember being out there, she'd probably be like, yeah, you just sat there and watched me. And I'm sure I did. But just like, you know, visiting with my mom while she was in the garden, you know, was always nice. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, when your mom's a gardener, she is so easy to shop for because all you have to do is go buy some flowers or go buy some plants. And your mom's like, thank you. This is so awesome. Right. I feel like I make their job easy sometimes, because if your mom has a clear passion, it's very easy. If you want to express, you know, your love for them or your appreciation, it's like, well, of course we're going to buy her a plant, right? Or we're going to get her a gift certificate to this nursery. That's easy. But of course, each of them has, you know, their own memories of time with me in the garden. And I would love it if some of them would have a garden someday. I don't expect it. If they do, that's fantastic. But, you know, it's not for everyone. But they're certainly going to have memories of spending time with me in the garden.
Yeah. And it just makes your whole home so much more enjoyable, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think it gives it that homey feel, you know, and the other thing too that's great about having a garden is, I'll tell you this, they do appreciate where food comes from.
Aw, that's where, perfect.
You know, they wouldn't maybe have that direct experience if they weren't, you know, seeing me harvest or helping me harvest at times or planting. You know, that makes a difference. So that part I think is cool. So they're learning, even though they don't really, you know, they're not intending to, they're just kind of absorbing it. But yeah. Oh, and I tell you what, when you have a podcast and you're producing a podcast, every week I probably listen to a new show, you know, over 20 times by the time it's released. And the first couple of times is I'm preparing some stuff for my editor. And then after that, after it's had an initial edit, I listen to it again. And then it goes through a second editing process because I want the show to sound, you know, as high quality as possible. And so who do you think is sitting beside me as I'm listening to these episodes, oftentimes in the car? And it's, of course, the kids. So they're taking it in, whether they want to or not sometimes. I think that they're growing and learning about gardening, too. They just maybe don't have to apply it right now, but they might be applying it later on in their life.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I'm just going to do something unusual and put you on hold for a super second because of... And then, so this is kind of the part of my show where we'll get to the root of things and I'll ask you some quicker questions. Like,
okay.
We kind of talked about your least favorite activity. Was that weeding? I mean, is that your least favorite activity or is there something that you don't like even more than that?
I don't like to be uncomfortable in the garden. That's probably my least favorite thing. And I always tell that to people too, when they're working with kids. I mean, I don't want to be on my knees, so I'll sit. I have this garden rocker. It's called a Vertex garden rocker. And that's one of my favorite things to use in the garden. So I'll use that to sit on and I can pivot and get to what I need to. Because you got to imagine I'm 6 feet tall, so I don't want to be on the ground on my hands and knees. That's not going to work for me. The other thing I'll do this time of year when the bugs start to get bad is I'll bring a fan with me. Because mosquitoes and a lot of pests that are going to bite are not good flyers. So it's helpful to have a really big fan blowing air on you. And then, of course, I'll be gardening under a big umbrella because I don't want to get sunburned. So I do a lot to try to make myself as comfortable as possible in the garden when I'm working, because that's going to mean the difference between going out there or just saying, forget it. It's too hot. It's too buggy. It's too whatever. Right. And so that's what is probably my least favorite thing, is working in the garden, being uncomfortable. And I see it a lot too, sometimes in schoolyard gardens. People are doing a great job with schoolyard gardens, trying to expose kids to gardening. I think it's fantastic. But sometimes we forget about the fact that kids want to be comfortable too. And so if you have kids that don't like the sun or don't enjoy sweating or whatever, I think we could make it a more pleasurable experience for them. And then hopefully it's something that they'll want to gravitate towards. If it's something where they're like, I'm not comfortable doing this, I don't enjoy being out sitting on the ground, or I don't enjoy getting sunburned, then they're not going to want to do it. So we have to think about that not only for ourselves, but for the people that we're working with in the garden.
I think that is so key. Like it's funny, one of my guests, I have my friend interview me and I said, I don't like to get dirty. Like, it sounds funny, but like when I get home from work and I have my even if I change into my jeans, those are my street jeans. Those are my jeans I'm going to school with. Like, if I'm just going down to, like, you know, grab something to put in a salad, or I'm going to, like, I don't. And the other thing, I wrote a blog post this summer about gardening barriers, because one of my big gardening barriers I realized was my shoes. Like, I don't like getting dirt in my shoes. I don't like being uncomfortable, that feeling. And I finally found a pair of, they're a little more hardcore than sandals, but I don't find, like, they've just been huge for me for getting down in the garden. And I think that's so true. Garden barriers, like making it comfortable. I like to wear garden gloves. My mom, my husband, neither one of them likes garden gloves, but I don't really like to dig in the dirt. I mean, when I'm going to do like a whole day of gardening, or a couple of hours, or even, you know, just harvesting or digging a new bed, you know, I have like garden clothes that are specifically for those days. But, you know, I totally understand that. I think that's so important. I'm so glad I asked you that question. You are just full of tons of golden seeds. I know listeners are going to love this. They're going to be like, Jackie, we have to like subscribe to that other podcast right away. But then they're going to come back to hear what else you say. So then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Oh, my, no doubt about it. My favorite activity is to sit on my porch and drink a glass of lemonade and look at my phone and respond to email or read something, just be on my porch and enjoy my garden, because my garden's my most beautiful garden's right in front of my porch. And I've made my porch into kind of an outdoor living room. So shame on any gardener who works their tail off and doesn't spend a little bit of time enjoying it, because I've done that as well. And I tell you what, there was one year I killed myself. This was like in 2009. I was in a garden tour, and it was a great garden tour. I felt like I was getting married again, and like I was in a receiving line, because my husband and I were sitting there in our lawn chairs kind of at the end as people were filing through, and we were talking to all of them, and it was wonderful. But I tell you what, I had worked so hard to make that garden look as good as I could possibly make it, that I did not go in my garden for a year after that. I had overdone it. Oh, and I was done. I'm like, you know what? This is not life giving to me. I don't want to be out here. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to deal with this. And I didn't. In fact, you know, I look back on 2010, and there's very few pictures of my garden. And so I, you know, anybody who's gardened can relate to that. I think if we don't meter our time a little bit, you know, you're in trouble. And this is where, you know, student gardeners have really helped me, because I cannot have a marathon session out in the garden and then come in and have enough energy to make supper, to, you know, help a kid with, you know, something that they're struggling with, you know, a friend situation or a tough subject in school or whatever it is. I've got to have enough gas in my tank to come in my house and function and do the other things that I need to do. And I can't be in my garden to the point of exhaustion. It's just never going to work for me on no day of the week. I mean, not even on the weekends, because we're flying around on the weekends too. And so getting help in the garden, there is absolutely no sin in doing that. I think sometimes gardeners are ashamed to say that they're getting help, or ashamed to say that they hired somebody to put their pond in instead of digging it by hand from Memorial Day to Labor Day. I mean, that's just silly. We are all busy. We all have finite energy, and we only have one body. So if you are, you know, hurting yourself out there, or you're overdoing it, I think we're losing sight of, you know, why we garden. So my absolute favorite thing is, heck, if I get a package, I'm going to go sit on my porch and open my package outside, just sit there for a second and be amongst the flowers. And even if I'm just, you know, scrolling through my phone, looking at Facebook or looking at email, why not do it there where I'm out and about with all of the things that bring me joy around me? So I don't know. That's what I do. And if saying any of that has helped anybody listening to think, you know what, it's not so bad, I've got help, I don't need to be embarrassed about that or hide that from my fellow gardeners, I think you're better off.
I love all that. And I know listeners are too, because I was just like, as I was washing the dishes this morning, thinking of like all the things I should be doing. And all, and I was just like, just be gentle on yourself, you know, and just like, don't be. And so it's almost like you're like saying exactly what was on my mind, because I feel like I have so much to do, and, you know, as usual, there's not enough time. And but I definitely do spend a lot of time in Mike's garden enjoying it. I have a little reading nook that I've really been enjoying this summer, and just sitting under one of his apple trees, and it's just been heavenly. And I, my favorite activity is to paint in the garden, which I have not gotten to do, but I have been working on painting a picture of my garden. So what's the best gardening advice you've ever received? Because you are just doling out advice to us like crazy. So what's the best advice you've ever received?
Well, I, you know, I can't even remember who told me this, but I think about it every time I have a plant failure. And that is, you know, if you have a plant that fails in an area, you know, take a clue. It wasn't happy there. So don't keep replanting that plant in that same space. It's just not, it might be the space, right? And so my parents had a Weigelia that failed. And I mean, I'm telling you, hats off to them. They were so determined. I think for like 5 years in a row, they would buy a new Weigelia and stick it in the ground. And they wanted a Weigelia there, you know? And finally, I'm just like, Mom, you know, think about it. It's not growing there. It doesn't like that spot. You know, let's pick something else. And so, you know, just talking to her about that. But I mean, I remember hearing that somewhere. And so if something's not working, I generally say, okay, thank you, Mother Nature. I've learned this lesson. Now I'll move on. I'm going to try something else.
I love that. Especially, I was just talking to the guy at the Box of Rain store near us about lavender. That I have struggled with lavender, and I was trying. His wife had some dried lavender there, and I was looking for lavender tips. And I feel like that's it. Every year, I'm like, it's going to grow, and I'm going to try a new spot. Every year, I try a new spot. But what he did tell me is that they're very hard to germinate. So I was encouraged that way. He said they were struggling. So once you get it going, they go really good. But getting new plants, so had to work on that one. How about your favorite tool? I noticed in your video you have one of those dig it tools, and I just interviewed the woman from that invented that dig it tool. She's like this 80-year-old woman she's just so charming to talk to. Wow. And you were like, it looked like you were planting seeds, like you were planting salad seeds using the dig it tool, which I always talk about. Salad seeds, cured seeds, I hate them because they're so tiny. Give me a sunflower seed any day.
Yeah. You know, you're right. The Digit's probably still my favorite tool. In fact, because I have so many student gardeners and my kids that are, you know, sometimes with me in the garden, I probably have 8 Digits. I'm not kidding. And they're all numbered because, of course, I want to make sure I'm keeping track of my inventory. But that is my favorite garden tool. I love it. I love that garden tool. It's great because it's powerful. It's very strong. It's that galvanized steel. It's got that serrated edge if you need to cut, and then it's bent, so it's got this trough that it makes, and the tip of it is sharp, so if you're cutting weeds, the handle is orange, you can see it, and I just like the way it feels. So it is probably that tool, and then the Vertex rocker that I mentioned earlier that I think is available at Lowe's, and you can even get a pretty fancy little cover for it, but which I do not have. I just use the rocker. But I love that. It's a garden rocker. It's got it kind of looks like a turtle shell underneath. But the place where you put the rocker, it's like kind of like a high heel. You're putting all your pressure on one little point, and then the other areas of the rocker are not affecting the plant material. So if you have a tight spot to garden in, the rocker is great for that. The seat can be adjusted up or down. You can swivel on it. You can lean forward. You got to be careful. Every now and then you're going to tip yourself right off that thing. And I always tell the student gardeners, I'm like, listen, you'll probably do it in front of us. And just know that that happens, you know, once a summer, it seems like everybody does it. We're going to fall off the garden rocker right in front of someone. And it's a little embarrassing, but it's just kind of a rite of passage. It just is the way it is, but it's my favorite thing. I don't fall off it anymore. I've kind of learned what I need to do and what I can't do with it, but it's my favorite. I mean, I'm never in my garden without the Digit or a garden rocker. It's just how I roll in the garden.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to look that up and get one, because I was just yesterday like so frustrated picking all our Swiss chard, and like at first I was fine bending over for a while, but then I was like, Mike, I have to sit down, your straw's all wet here, and like, and so he gave me this white bucket and that didn't work either, and finally what I did was go found an old pair of jeans I could just put on the ground. I didn't care if my knees got dirty, and just so frustrating. And I know, and I hardly ever get to have to harvest. So I imagine if I was actually doing a lot of it, that might make me more encouraged to help harvest. Because I am not like, Mike built this mini farm this year, and like, I'm missing the deep beds that we've always had, where like I could just sit around the edge with my scissors and like have my coffee there. And it was, now he's got like this mini farm with these straight rows, and it's a lot more work. Okay.
Well, and I'll tell you that this is like five levels up from sitting on a bucket. I always tell people it's about the height of a bucket, but the seat itself is like a tractor seat. So it's shaped, it's ready to be there for you. But I have probably five of them, and we just put them right by the basketball hoop on the driveway. So everybody knows where the garden rockers are. And then if they need one, they can grab one. My son, who has his own lawn mowing business and does all this mechanical stuff, crazily, I can't believe I have a guy that I can't believe I helped create a human being that's kind of a mechanic. But yes, I did. And when he's working on his car or his lawnmower or his trailer or whatever else he's got, he is all, even using those garden rockers for that, because, you know, he's 6'8". He doesn't want to be on his hands and knees working on a car. So that thing comes in handy so much. You're going to love it.
Cool. I wonder if Mike will love it, because he's over 6 feet tall, too.
Oh, there you go.
All right. How about a favorite recipe? What do your kids love to eat, or what do you love to cook from the garden?
Oh, my gosh. I have a recipe for pesto that I shared in my Basil Mania episode earlier this summer. And I call it my glory pesto recipe, because when you're done making it, you want to drop to your knees and thank the Lord for basil and for pesto, because it's so fantastic. But it's not my recipe. It's a recipe that I learned from a chef here in town that had worked at all of the high-end restaurants. And it's a basic basil pesto recipe. It's nothing special, but for me, it's like my go-to recipe. And it's got, I'm trying to think, I'm totally flying off the seat of my pants here, but it's in that episode if anybody's really interested. And then I think I talked about how I make it with spaghetti or angel hair pasta for a pesto spaghetti that's fantastic cold. But it's got pine nuts in it, or you can substitute sunflower, and it's got a lot of olive oil in it. And I happen to live near a place that's called Love That Olive, and it's an organic olive oil specialty store that sources all of the olive oil direct from the grower, and it's just wonderful. And after you've been spoiled like that, all other olive oil just kind of pales in comparison. So I'm using that olive oil, and it's got garlic, and I add the garlic I think at the very beginning, but I don't over process it, which is key. And then just salt to taste at the end, which I also think makes a difference. And
do you put butter in it?
Thing. No butter, no. But I tell you what, another little secret that I learned when I was preparing this particular episode, when I was working on this Basil Mania episode, is if you add a little lemon juice to your pesto, you will help it maintain that green color, that wonderful, vibrant green color that your pesto looks like when you first create it. After you store it for a while, after it's oxidized, it really kind of turns into a not attractive green color. I think of it as MASH green. It's like if you were little and you watched the show MASH, it's that green color that basil turns into after it's oxidized. And so a little bit of lemon juice in your pesto, it doesn't really do too much to the flavor, but it really helps with that color. It helps maintain that color.
Awesome. I worked at this restaurant 1 year, and they made this pesto mayonnaise where they would just mix like a tablespoon of pesto and a couple of tablespoons of mayonnaise together. That was to die for. That would go good in, I bet. I made oregano pesto finally this year. That came out pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I used walnuts and my oregano, and then I just followed. My mom has gave me these Italian cookbooks that are so good. I can't remember what they're called, but I could put them in the show notes. But and I just used the pesto recipe from there, but just replaced the pine nuts with walnuts and the oregano with. It did call one of the recipes called for. I did look at some online oregano pesto recipes that they used oregano and basil, but I didn't have enough basil at the time, so I'm pretty excited to try that once my basil, put the oregano and the basil together. But I just have a ton of oregano, like, out my kazoo.
Yeah, well, and I was just going to say, and don't forget, we're getting into that time of year where we're going to start to have pumpkin seeds, and you can use pumpkin seeds in your pesto as well.
Really? And I like that idea of sunflower seeds. I've never tried that. That sounded good and less expensive than walnuts, for sure.
Yeah, or pine nuts. My goodness.
Yeah. How about a favorite internet resource?
Oh, well, I personally think it's hard to beat Mike McGrath, You Bet Your Garden, that A to Z website if you have an issue. I think that's a tremendous online resource. It's probably my go-to, especially if I have folks that, like, family members or friends that are asking questions about common issues, I'll refer them to that website. It's so easy. It's just alphabetical. And he's just made it so easy. And it's very conversational. It's very pragmatic. And it's proven advice. It's not like anecdotal. It's very well grounded. I really, really love that resource.
How about a favorite reading material or a book? Magazine? Do you still read magazines? I'm so curious to know this. Because...
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a voracious magazine reader, online and print. Oh my gosh. If I had to pick one, I don't even think I can pick one.
All right. Name three.
Well, Garden Design Magazine's fantastic. Their online version and their print version. Fantastic. Let's see if I had to narrow it down. Oh my goodness. Not necessarily a purely gardening magazine, but I think Better Homes and Gardens is fantastic. So I still read that. I mean, read that cover to cover. I love everything in that magazine. I tell you, here's one that if you have, yeah, here's one. I'll mention this one, and it's Magnolia. It's the new one by Joanna Gaines, right? And I love that magazine. I think it's quarterly, but I think the photography is fantastic. I think the tips are great. It's not super in depth, but it's lovely. It's beautiful. It's great.
I'll have to check that out. I never heard of that one. So, how about some business advice? Got any business advice for listeners? Maybe not necessarily on how to sell extra produce, but I don't know, any kind of, you seem to like have a lot going on.
Well, one thing I can tell you about is this September, I'll be hosting two separate masterminds for people in the gardening horticulture industry. And the first one will be for garden communicators. So whether it's garden bloggers, garden podcasters, writers, or content creators of any kind. And if folks are interested in participating in that mastermind, that'll be starting in September. And then there's another mastermind that I'll be hosting. And this one is for horticulture professionals, landscape designers, or nursery owner operators. And both of these are masterminds that'll be facilitated by me. We'll meet once a week. And unlike a lot of masterminds online, mine will have an element of training that's built in, because that's probably been my only frustration with other paid mastermind groups I've been part of, is oftentimes the facilitator has so much information and they'll tell you, something that might be a solution or an option, but they don't talk to you about how to make that happen. And so that's something different that I'll be doing with mine, is, you know, especially if we're talking about new technology or different resources, that will actually get into the how of making that happen. And so that's something that I'm launching this fall that I think is a great resource for folks. Masterminds are so helpful because they can be a game changer if you're a content creator or if you're a business owner operator, because you have this group of folks that are very motivated to grow and learn and to be productive and get things done, and they can hold you accountable. You can get tons of advisement, lots of different perspectives, lots of resources, expand your network. There are so many benefits, and they're really, really wonderful. And it's a great way where you can kind of feel like you've got the support and benefit of having a small group of like-minded people that really have your back. And so I'm really excited to start that this fall. I've been working, as I mentioned, I think at the top of the show, I'm in two masterminds myself, and they're an integral part of my week and the things that I need to get accomplished in any given week. So they're excellent.
Awesome. I'm going to have to look into that because I've been looking for a mastermind, but I think the key is actually having a paid mastermind because, I mean, look at things that you're willing to pay for. And to me, it's like continuing education. You know, as a teacher, I just got on my computer this morning and see, oh my God, did my license expire? Did I not get my credits? You know, as a gardener or any kind of, you know, so my audience, a lot of people are gardeners who want to become farmers and go to the market, or maybe gardeners who are like Mike and I trying to grow enough food for a whole year for our family, you know, or really supplement our produce bill. Like apparently most of my listeners have some gardening experience. I do have a lot of beginners, but a lot have some gardening experience. And so if you're trying to build a business, getting a group of people that are committed to seeing you succeed, you know, a lot of people, it took me so long to grasp this, that it's not a competition, and how to reach out to other, having those other people there that are going through the same struggles you are. And but that paid piece is just huge. And just like you would pay to take a class, but it's like the difference between going to school online and sitting in a classroom. I'd rather go to school online. I feel like I getting to read my other people in my classes' papers as compared to if I'm sitting at the table with them. You know, for one thing, you've got the time constraint. The class is only an hour. Who's going to raise their hand? It's always the same. I'm always shy. I'm the last one to talk, last one to raise my hand. I don't get to hear what the other shy people in the class, whereas when it's online, you have to read the other pieces, papers. To me, it's like that. My paid groups that I've belonged to, paid Facebook groups, paid masterminds, to me, it's very similar. And I totally would recommend to, like, if you're a listener out there and you're like, what's a mastermind? And you want to start going to the market, or you want to start a podcast, or you want to start a blog about gardening, or, you know, just even you want to start growing fruit trees, join a mastermind about, you know, growing fruit trees. That's awesome that you have those. And I hope people will go look at your website if they've been looking for one, or, you know, check some others out there. You are totally full of golden seeds. I'm so glad we did this. And so here's my final question, because we're like an hour and a half, and I actually try to keep my episodes to 35 minutes, but I do have guests like you who come on and just have so much value. I never shut anybody off. Like, that's one pet peeve I have with podcasts, that like, I do like the 30 minute thing, but when they do have an interesting guest, like you were saying, and they don't talk, but I do like the diversity, like you were saying. Like, I've heard people complain, some people are cookie cutter things, some people are this, some people are too long, some people aren't long enough, more spontaneity. People tell me to not be so stuck to my script. I like the diversity. I like having different podcasts. If I want a longer thing, I'll listen to the show. If I want a shorter thing, you know. Anyway, my final question is a doozy. So it goes like this. If there's one change that you would like to see to create a greener world, Jennifer, what would it be? Like, for example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I keep it really simple. I tell people to try to live in harmony with nature. And I think that means that they need to have an appreciation for it, but they also need to listen to Mother Nature. I think sometimes, especially with new gardeners, I'll hear a lot of frustration or kind of this all or nothing attitude, you know, about something that did or didn't work in their garden. And, I don't know. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm going on my, 25th year of gardening. I guess I just, I just would encourage people to relax a little bit and try to work in conjunction with what your garden's telling you instead of maybe fighting everything that's happening there. Try to understand maybe why it's happening. I think about the show that I did this time last year with Robert Corick. He's the author of Understanding Roots. And just that one show in particular, understanding how the roots of trees grow and how far past the canopy they grow and how important root hairs are and different things like that. I mean, if you can expand your knowledge base about why things are happening the way that they are and trying to work with that instead of fighting it or giving up on it or being so frustrated by it. I think that'll go a long way to people changing behavior and working with Mother Nature and growing a greener world.
Aww, you have been so eloquent and just, I love, you're so knowledgeable and just, I know listeners are going to love this as much as I have. So do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden? Not that you haven't given us plenty, and the last answer kind of goes right into this, but.
Motivational quote. Every week I do quotables on my show.
That's what I was going to say. Sorry.
Yeah. Every week there's a quote, there's a quotable segment on my show. And I'm trying to think.
Before I launched, I wanted to start my show off with a garden joke, but I couldn't find enough garden jokes. So I quickly got rid of that after episode one, but sorry to interrupt. Okay. So what's your quote?
What's my quote? You know, here's one that's coming to mind and it's a pun, and I do have garden puns, but of course it's the cantaloupe, let us marry. We will make a fine pair.
I love that. Okay. So tell listeners one more time, what's your website, how to connect with you and.
Sure. Okay. So my website is 6 Foot Mama. It's the number 6FTMAMA.com. So 6FootMama.com. And when you get to my website, you'll be able to see the Facebook group is there. You can click there to join the Facebook group. It's the listener community for the show. And the show, of course, the podcast is called Still Growing. It's the Still Growing Gardening Podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, or Overcast. Stitcher and Overcast are probably my two favorite applications for listening to podcasts. So if you haven't given that a try, give that a try. I love the player on Overcast. I think it's so easy to use. But I think if I'm searching for a show, I like to search on Stitcher because I think their search feature is better. But once I found the show, I'll probably listen to it in Overcast. So there's a couple of application tips for you. And let's see, anything else? If you're interested in joining the masterminds, you can check on my website. There'll be a page up that's called Work With Me. And there's an application process because, of course, I want to try to create masterminds that are a good fit. It's like putting a family together. It's really important to have a good fit for this group of people that are coming together. But you're meeting weekly. It's an hour a week. And it's usually this particular mastermind will start in September and go through December.
And you can never, I don't think, invest in yourself enough. And so the nice thing is like when other people are invested in that, it just makes a whole different game change. Then there's tons of free content out there. But if you want to take your game to the next level, I just think you can't invest. You know, that's the best place to go. It's a great way to go.
Absolutely.
So, well, thank you so much for sharing everything with us today.
You're so welcome, Jackie. This was really, really fun. It was fun to connect with you and your audience. And I just encourage people to listen to gardening podcasts. It's a great way to learn and grow.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. Okay. I'm shutting the recording off. But hey, green future growers, do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.